Hare Krishna. First, I'd like to introduce a new temporary resident here. Well, in a certain form, and that is Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur. I just placed him and his eternal master, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, on the altar. There's a tree in Jagannath Puri called Siddha Bakul. It was the practice, and still is the practice, to offer Lord Jagannath a twig every morning for him to brush his teeth. So one morning, after taking darshan of Lord Jagannath in Puri, the pujari gave one of those twigs to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And after the Lord would have darshan of the Lord, he would visit Haridas Thakur. And he saw that Haridas Thakur was sitting and chanting in the sun. So he planted that twig in the ground, and it immediately bloomed into a bakul tree. And Haridas Thakur used to sit under that tree and chant. And that tree witnessed so many of the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Haridas Thakur, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and other associates who would gather at that place. So that tree is still alive, one of the few witnesses of Mahaprabhu's pastimes that are still present. And some years ago, there was like not a hurricane, but some strong wind, and it blew down a limb of the tree. And from that limb, this deity, or this, I guess you could say deity of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Haridas Thakur, was carved from that piece of wood. So they're now on the altar there to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's left side. And there's also, under that piece of wood, there's a leaf from the Siddha Bakul tree. Hare Krishna. And of course, Haridas Thakur is the acharya for chanting the holy name. So we desperately need his mercy. Today's topic is the role of japa in bhakti. In previous seminars, retreats, and workshops, I spoke on the topic, what is the role of japa? What is the role of the holy name in the life of a devotee? And I always responded that the question really should be, what is the role of the life of the devotee in the life of the holy name? Because the holy name is Krishna. So it's really not, I mean, in the beginning we might think, well, what is Krishna's role in my life? But what we should really ask is, what is my role in Krishna's life? Today the topic is a little different, but it does raise the question, what is the role of bhakti in my life? And what is bhakti? So what we see on the screen is Srila Rupa Goswami's basic definition of Uttama Bhakti, which we could call pure devotional service, which is what Srila Prabhupada came to teach us and what we are meant to practice. And in the introduction to the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada has really analyzed this verse in detail, following the commentaries of Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And I will touch on some of the important points, because this verse is really meant to guide our entire life, including our practice of japa and everything we do. So, anyabilasita. Anya means other, and abilas means desire. In pure devotional service, we should have no other desire than to serve Krishna and please Krishna. Now, this suffix, itta, has been discussed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and it means that in our normal state of mind, we should have no other desire than to serve Krishna. But in an extreme situation, we may pray to Krishna for something that one could call material. But even then, it's not necessarily material. But he gives the example that if someone comes to kill you, you know, even though ordinarily we wouldn't pray to Krishna for the body, but if someone comes to kill you, you might, in that moment of crisis, you might pray, you know, please save me, Krishna, I don't want to die yet, I'm not ready, or I need more time. That is not considered a deviation from pure devotional service, because in your normal state of mind, you wouldn't pray for the sake of the body. But again, because we use the body in relation to Krishna's service, it's not necessarily material to pray for the sake of the body, but in general we don't. So that's our goal, to develop that pure desire. And if we have the desire to develop that pure desire, that also counts. Because in the stage of sadhana bhakti, we're not completely pure. But if our goal is to serve Krishna without any other motivation, we're considered pure. And that should be our motive. Should be our motive. Jnana, of course, means in this context, especially mental speculation or impersonal speculation. Karma means fruitive work. You work to get something for yourself or your family to enjoy. And anavritam means one's bhakti shouldn't be covered by that. And there the example is that in the system, this is in the Vedic context, in the system of karma, karmakanda, is the duty of the son to perform the funeral rites for the father. So, if someone thinks that, oh, you know, if I don't do this, my bhakti will suffer, that means he doesn't understand that bhakti is independent. It doesn't depend on karma or jnana. But to the contrary, karma and jnana depend on bhakti for success. One can be a karma yogi or a Gyani Yogi, but unless there's some touch of bhakti, he can't be successful. But bhakti doesn't depend on them, and in fact, bhakti becomes weaker if you mix karma or jnana with it. So one doesn't have to do those, rituals for the family. But one could rightly think, because I could see from some of the expressions on the faces that this sounds like very like the old days when we were too fanatical and we didn't have any relationship with our families. But this is the philosophy that we shouldn't think that our progress in devotional service depends on these, you could say, secondary activities. But one could think, in the way of Krishna consciousness, that if I don't do this, then the family and relatives and friends of the family will criticize that, oh, he's a devotee and he didn't perform the funeral. Or that if I go, I can make people favorable to Krishna consciousness and they can, and then in that way one could go. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the normal duties that we have to do in relation to the body, like sleeping, bathing, dressing, is not outside of pure devotional service. If the motive is to keep the body and soul fit to serve Krishna. He says if you go to work and there are non-devotees in the workplace and you have to make small talk with them, that's also natural. You have to do that. So those things that we have to do just because we're living in the material world don't place us outside of pure devotional service. But within our hearts, we should, we do our duty, but within our hearts, we should really be eager to further our Krishna consciousness, to spend every moment that we can in hearing and chanting about Krishna and remembering Krishna. And Krishna, the word Krishna means Krishna, of course. It also means Krishna's expansions, like Ram, Nrisimha, and others. It includes Krishna's pure devotees. It includes Krishna's paraphernalia. It doesn't mean only Krishna as, Shamsundar, the threefold bending form, but it certainly does include him. And anukulyena means it should be favorable to Krishna's pleasure. Like once I met a very big man in Bombay. At the time, his family was ranked like number 3 in wealth in India. And he was sort of a proud type of person, not really very devotional. But he was sort of like boasting about how religious he was. So he showed me the silver box he had filled with tulsi leaves. And he said that he never drinks tea without putting a tulsi leaf in it. Now, you see, drinking tea is not really favorable to devotional service because Krishna doesn't want us to drink tea. He doesn't accept tea as an offering. So Anukulyena, being favorable to Krishna's pleasure, means two things. One, we should have the intention of pleasing Krishna, and we should also offer Krishna what pleases him. Sometimes Krishna likes to fight, and so during Krishna's pastimes, we find that he often fought with demons, and he enjoyed fighting with them and killing them. But those demons, although they gave Krishna pleasure, but their intention was not to give Krishna pleasure. Their intention was to kill Krishna, which of course is impossible. So that is not counted as bhakti either. So it should be both. We have the intention to please Krishna, and we should actually offer Krishna what he wants. And we learn that from Sadhu Shastra and Guru, what Krishna wants, how to please Krishna. And Anushilanam. And this, in terms of that question, what is the role of bhakti in a person's life? In one sense, is the most important word. Shilanam means cultivation. It's not just a sentiment, bhakti, but it's a cultivation with one's body, mind, and words. And anu means to follow, like we follow Rupa Goswami, so we're called Rupanugas. So it means we cultivate it following the previous acharyas and the revealed scriptures. But anu also means continuous. And this is an important point. It's not that, okay, I have a compartment in my mind for bhakti, or I have a compartment in my life for bhakti. But uttama bhakti is continuous. It's 24/7. It's like, it's not that, okay, now 5 to 7 in the morning I do bhakti, and then I do, you know, and I work and enjoy. No. Everything should be done for the pleasure of Krishna. Even bathing. And I'm sure we all have that. Okay, I'm going to bathe. I'm going to get dressed. I'm going to begin my japa for the pleasure of Krishna. Our chanting should be for the pleasure of Krishna. Everything should be for the pleasure of Krishna at all times. And that is uttama bhakti, the first class devotional service. Mahatma Prabhu asked if there would be time for questions. I'm almost thinking, because this was such an important topic, it's the basis of everything we do, maybe ask now and at different stages, but the questions should really be on the topic. Yes, Yadubha Prabhu. Yeah, Yadubhara Prabhu has made a very good point that whatever we do should be for Krishna's pleasure. So sometimes we might think in an apparently selfish way, you know, how can I improve my japa? How can I get more pleasure out of my japa? And not thinking of Krishna's pleasure. But ultimately, it's really Krishna's pleasure that gives pleasure to the devotee. Because we're parts and parcels of Krishna. And Krishna's the whole, we're the part. So if Krishna's pleased, then we'll be pleased. And if we try to make ourselves happy independent of Krishna, we won't really be happy. Which is basically what everyone's trying to do. So because of the conditioning of But it's also the nature of the soul to want to be happy, but because of the habit, we might be thinking in terms of what makes me happy in Krishna consciousness. But we should know, and we should become more and more conscious of the fact that whatever happiness we experience can only be in relation to Krishna's pleasure. I remember when I used to, not when I used to, but it was very common in the beginning when I first joined. I'd always be thinking, like, I'm doing this because it would make Prabhupada happy. You know, whatever, singing the Nisringa prayers or chanting japa or not overeating, whatever it was. You think, oh, you know. And I would imagine that, like, Prabhupada is listening to me chant, so I should chant very nicely for his pleasure. Okay. So this is the general definition of bhakti. And Rupa Goswami has explained that within bhakti, there are three stages: sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. And everyone basically begins from the stage of sadhana bhakti. Bhava bhakti is a very advanced, liberated stage, shuddha sattva, beyond the modes of material nature. In that stage, Krishna is actually revealed. So we are in the stage of sadhana bhakti, and so now we will see Rupa Goswami's definition of sadhana bhakti. That's also very important for us. Oh, well, we can read this. When this is Uttama Bhakti, when first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires. Knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruitive action. One, the devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. So this is the definition of sadhana bhakti: kriti sadhya bhavat sadhya bhava sasadhanadi bha nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam hridi sadhyata. When transcendental devotional service, by which love for Krishna is attained, is executed by the senses, it is called sadhana bhakti, or the regulative discharge of devotional service. Such devotion eternally exists within the heart of every living entity. The awakening of this eternal devotion is the potentiality of devotional service in practice. So there's another verse, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, that love of Krishna is eternally established within the heart. And by the process of chanting and hearing, the consciousness is purified and that love becomes awakened. So that is our process. And love, he's using the word bhava, that is the goal, but that is the result of proper execution of sadhana. And in bhava bhakti, as I mentioned, Krishna is revealed. One could be sitting motionless, you know, like Raghunath Das Goswami or any of these highly advanced devotees, and be completely absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. And that's not being executed with the senses. Even the mind, which is the center of the senses, it's not really being done by the mind precisely, but it's Krishna and his pastimes have been revealed within the mind. But in Sadhanabhakti, we use the senses. And we use, and in japa, we use the tongue and, you know, vocal apparatus to articulate the holy names. We use our fingers to move on the japa mala and engage the sense of touch. We use the ear to hear the holy name. And the goal is to fix the mind on the sound of the holy name. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said that if two senses are fixed, then the mind will be fixed. And therefore he said if the sense of hearing is fixed and the sense of touch is fixed on the beads, then the mind will be fixed. The goal is to develop love, to awaken love. And of course, we all know that we're not just chanting for the sake of chanting so that we can say we finished our quota of rounds. Of course, we do want to complete our quota of rounds. That's our duty. But beyond that, we want to chant in such a way that our eternal love for Krishna is awakened. And that is true sadhana bhakti. Okay, we can move on. Now, we come to the point of what is sadhana bhakti. And in this verse, which is quoted from the Padma Purana, explains the basic principle of Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. Smartavya satatam Vishnur, Vishmartavyo najatu chit, sarve vidhi nishedha syu, etayor eva kinkara. Krishna is the origin of Lord Vishnu. He should always be remembered and never forgotten at any time. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the Shastras should be the servants of these two principles. So there are so many rules and regulations. Which Srila Prabhupada introduced to us only gradually because there were so many. We couldn't have been able to handle them. We wouldn't have been able to handle them all at once. But the basic principle is to always remember Krishna. The verse says Vishnu, but Vishnu is the same as Krishna, or Krishna is the origin of Vishnu. And never forget him. And all of the other rules and prohibitions are servants of these two.
Is there one more thing you want to know? It's okay? Sorry.
Now, in the purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada speaks about the chanting of 16 rounds. And he says that in order to be able to always remember Krishna and never forget him, one must chant 16 rounds every day. And this is the point. What is the role of japa in bhakti, the sadhana bhakti? The role is that it fulfills the purpose. It fulfills the purpose. Srila Prabhupada mentions that
devotees engage in other activities to spread Krishna consciousness. They distribute books and they enroll life members. And those activities are not ordinary activities. They are also meant to help us to remember Krishna. When we distribute a book, we tell people about Krishna. We think that the book is about Krishna. When we go to enroll a life member, we tell people about Krishna. But even then, we must chant 16 rounds daily in order to be able to remember Krishna. And we've seen practically that sometimes devotees are engaged in activities that in principle are related to Krishna and meant to further the cause of Krishna consciousness, but if they don't chant their 16 rounds attentively, they have difficulties remembering Krishna. They have difficulties in Krishna consciousness. When we were traveling with Srila Prabhupada in India, early, before we had any temples in India, when Prabhupada was just accepting invitations to speak at different places and we were accompanying him. One European boy joined us, which was very unusual. Hardly any Americans and Europeans came to India then. It was like very rare, very. And what to speak of joining us? We didn't have any temples or anything. We were just like traveling from place to place. But he came. He was very nice. He would always sit next to me during prasad, which was very simple. Very, very simple. Boiled rice and dal. Maybe some boiled vegetables. And he would say, Krishna exists. Krishna exists. Otherwise, how could someone as fallen as me get this nice prasad every day? So one day, you know, as he was learning the philosophy, he came to know that all service is absolute. As Krishna is absolute, then Krishna's service is absolute. So he asked Srila Prabhupada, if all service is absolute, why do we have to chant 16 rounds? Why can't we just distribute books or make life members? And he gave the example, like, what if I have rounds left and somebody comes and he could become a life member? You know, should I not meet him because I have to chant my rounds? And Srila Prabhupada was explaining, but somehow he was really insisting on this point, that if all service is absolute, then why do we have to chant 16 rounds? And finally, Srila Prabhupada asserted himself as the acharya. Like, sat very erect and he said, why do you have to chant 16 rounds? Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants you to chant 16 rounds. And then he said, you can eat and sleep the whole day and night, but you must chant 16 rounds. In other words, don't think that your service is so important that you can't. If it comes to a choice, which it doesn't, because 16 rounds only takes 2 hours or a little more or less. But if it comes to a choice, Prabhupada is saying you must chant your 16 rounds. Don't think your other service is so important. And then looking at all the other devotees, Srila Prabhupada said, this is a special prerogative for him. Don't think you can do that. But so that's the point. And there were many times in India where we were very busy, but Prabhupada really made the point that we have to chant our rounds. And he wanted us to hear the class as well. Sometimes devotees would be out late. You know, even the best of devotees, like once Yamuna Devi was out shopping for the deities, and so she missed the evening program, missed Prabhupada's class. And Prabhupada said, don't think that what you're doing is any different from what, and he like pointed to the neighborhood, the buildings, the people from them. You know, unless you hear and chant in the association of devotees, what you're doing will be no different from what they're doing. So this is the, and in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says that of all the regulative principles, the spiritual master's instruction to chant 16 rounds daily is most essential. So this is the essence. And as we have gathered here, to understand that it's not just a matter of mechanically, absent-mindedly, somehow getting through 16 rounds, but it means chanting with attention, making the effort to chant with attention and develop our relationship with Krishna as the holy name. Which brings us to the next point. As Her Grace Manmohini so eloquently expressed earlier, the holy name is Krishna. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Vinatvam Nama Namino. The holy name of Krishna is transcendentally blissful. It bestows all spiritual benedictions, for it is Krishna himself, the reservoir of all pleasure. Krishna's name is complete and is the form of all transcendental mellows. It is not a material name under any condition, and it is no less powerful than Krishna himself. Actually, each word is full of tremendous meaning. One could speak at length on each word, but for the sake of time, we will continue. Since Krishna's name is not contaminated by the material qualities, there is no question of it being involved with Maya. Krishna's name is always liberated and spiritual. It is never conditioned by the laws of material nature, Nityamukta. This is because the name of Krishna and Krishna himself are identical. So Srila Prabhupada explains that in the material world, or the relative world, the name of a thing and the thing are different. If we're thirsty and we chant water, 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 just chanting water, water won't quench our thirst, because the word water and the substance water are different. But in the spiritual world or the absolute world, the name of Krishna and Krishna himself are the same. So when we chant Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna is personally present, dancing on our tongue. So when we talk about surrendering to Krishna, that's the last instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Vrija, surrender to Krishna. When we talk about serving Krishna favorably, we're talking about serving the holy name, who is Krishna, talking about chanting the holy name. And we should always be conscious that the holy name is Krishna, that our time for japa is our time to be with Krishna, specifically. And that's our special time. You know, and we don't want to let anything impinge on that. Like Sai said, no clocks, no. One of our god brothers, Gopal Bhatta Prabhu, is a very big businessman. I forget what he said, but his business earns $120 million a year and he's got thousands of workers. But he's very serious about his japa. He's very regulated. He gets up very early, and before anything else, like 2:30 to 4:30 in the morning, he chants his 16 rounds. And he says when he chants, he takes off his wristwatch, takes off his eyeglasses, and it's like there's nothing else. It's just him and the holy name. It's his time with the holy name. And we should treasure that time, and we should be on our best behavior. Srila Prabhupada has explained that the Maha Mantra is actually a prayer to the Lord and the energy of the Lord. Krishna, of course, means Krishna, and Hare means Radha, is the energy of the Lord. So it's a prayer to the Lord and the energy of the Lord to engage us in their devotional service. So say you were going for a job interview. You know, you're sitting across from your potential employer and he begins the interview and you start dozing off. Is that going to make a very good impression? Is that going to, like, show your potential employer that you're a good candidate for his service? So we're like, you know, we're praying, you know, desperately, Radha Krishna, please engage me in your service. We're calling their names, and, you know, if you call someone's name, they're going to respond, like, yes, you, what did you want? So, as devotees, we're not going to ask for anything material, we'll just ask for service. That's all a devotee wants. So, you call, yes. What is it that you want? Hare Krishna. Oh Lord, I want your service. So we have to really be like, this is important. We're associating with Krishna and we're begging for his service. We're begging him to engage us in his service. So we want to show that we're really serious, that we're not just, you know, saying something that we think we should be saying, but we really are serious about it. And then he will reciprocate. Now, one point about every endeavor in devotional service, and this does apply to chanting japa, is that our success depends on a combination of our efforts and Krishna's mercy. A favorite example is the story of when Mother Yashoda wanted to bind Krishna with ropes. This is part of Krishna's pastimes, Krishna Lila, that when, in fact, this also illustrates an important point about bhakti, that definition, Krishna Anushilanam, what Krishna means. So anyway, Mother Yashoda was nursing baby Krishna, and the milk on this fire started to boil over. So she set Krishna aside to attend to the milk. Now, coming back to our original definition from Srila Rupa Goswami, one could think, she's setting aside Krishna to tend to the milk? I mean, she thinks the milk is more important than Krishna? But the milk is Krishna's paraphernalia. Everything in the household of Mother Yashoda was meant for Krishna's pleasure. So that the paraphernalia is also on the absolute platform, the same as Krishna. His name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes, his entourage, his paraphernalia, they're all Krishna. And pure devotional service means to serve all of them. And sometimes serving them pleases Krishna more. Lord Shiva tells Parvati, Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam Param. Of all types of worship, the worship of Vishnu is the highest. But even higher than the worship of Vishnu is this worship of things that are related to Vishnu, like the devotees of Vishnu. That's higher than the service of Vishnu directly. Like Tulsi. Tulsi is also Tadiya. She's related to Krishna. And so in that mood, that milk that was meant for Krishna's pleasure, so she set aside the milk, excuse me, she set aside Krishna to attend to the milk. But Krishna, and he actually did take pleasure in that, but outwardly he became upset that he, and so he went and got a pot of yogurt and broke it and began eating it and feeding the monkeys and his other friends. So when Mother returned to the room where she had left Krishna, she saw these little footprints smeared with, she saw the broken pot of yogurt and she saw these little buttery footprints. She knew, oh, this is the work of my naughty child, Krishna. So she wanted to, you know, catch him and partly punish him, but also she wanted to restrain him from creating more mischief. So she chased after him, she caught him, and then she wanted to bind him. It's not like a cruel thing like in the Westerns, you know, the villains come and they like barge in on the innocent bankers or householders and then they tie him up and gag them. But it was like a way of sort of keeping the child. Like now we have these play pens and things to restrain. They didn't have play pens then, so they would just like tie up the child. So that's what she wanted to do. And like another thing, like just so we don't think that this is something cruel, like in India, like sometimes a man would be blind and another person would help him. So like they would tie a rope between the blind man and the person who was leading the way just so they wouldn't get separated or something. So anyway, she wanted to tie him up. And so she put the rope around his waist and it was the width of two fingers too short. So she added some more rope and it was still two fingers too short. She added more and it was still two fingers too short. And this was very perplexing because every morning she would, when she dressed her young little son, baby son, she would tie like a belt around his waist. She never had any trouble. So she called her friends and they brought their ropes and they're just like yards and yards and miles of ropes and it was still two fingers too short. And then her friends started to tell her, Yasodhamai, this isn't working. This isn't working. You know, you better just leave it because it's not happening. But she didn't give up. She didn't give up. She got all the ropes, and they were a cowherd community. They had a lot of ropes for tying the cows and calves and bulls. She couldn't do it. But then Krishna, and she was like perspiring and she wasn't giving up. And she wasn't like, she just thought it would be the best for him as his mother, playing the role of his mother. She felt it was better to restrain him so he didn't cause any more mischief. So Krishna saw that in her. She was perspiring and laboring. And then out of his mercy, he allowed her to bind him. So again, our acharyas, Shiva Jiva Goswami, Shiva Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, have explained that from this incident, we can understand how to bind Krishna. One element is our hard labor, parishram, like Mother Yashoda, tireless. Even though she failed and failed and failed again, but she still didn't give up. And even though her friends were saying, don't bother, you know, you're not going to be able to do it, she didn't give up. And then the other is Krishna's mercy, Krishna Kripa. So we're trying to capture Krishna. We're trying to bind the holy name of Krishna, the sound of the holy name of Krishna in our minds. And sometimes it seems like an exercise in futility because Krishna just isn't being bound. But we have to keep trying. We should not give up, like Mother Yashoda never gave up. We should not give up, and eventually Krishna will be merciful. And he'll give us a little taste. Give us a little taste. And it's something I try to keep in mind. Because sometimes we do struggle. But I always have it in my mind that Krishna's watching. I mean, we might think that, oh, Krishna's neglecting me. Krishna's ignoring me. Krishna's not reciprocating. But I always keep in mind that Krishna is there. He's witnessing my efforts. And he's just waiting to see, you know, how sincere I am, how tireless I am in my efforts. And when he sees that I really am sincere, that I'm not giving up, that I'm not becoming impatient or getting distracted, then eventually he will show his mercy. And knowing that he will, it like gives you encouragement to continue the effort, because you know, like after he disappeared from the Rasa dance, this I can't explain the pastime, but Krishna called the gopis to dance with them and then he disappeared. And they were looking all over for him and they couldn't find him. Then eventually the same thing. He appeared to them. But they were a little upset that, you know, we sacrificed everything for you and then you disappeared. He said, don't think I was far from you. I was watching you all the time. I just wanted to increase your eagerness for me. So sometimes Krishna's like that. He keeps himself a little away just to increase our eagerness. Otherwise, if we think Krishna's too easy to obtain, like Prabhupada says, God is not cheap. And, oh, I can just pick up my mala anytime I want and Krishna will come. Not so easy. And Krishna doesn't want us to take him for granted. But if we really persevere and make our effort to chant, you know, articulate each word, each syllable properly and hear attentively, eventually he will show his mercy to us and give us a little experience of his presence and a little taste. Hare Krishna. So, well, it's the time that we've been given. I'm not sure. Yes, we. The question is, I mentioned that sadhana bhakti is executed with the senses. So he's asking, is that the same as karma yoga? Well, as long as we are conditioned, we have to engage with the senses and the mind, which is the center of the senses, or the sixth sense. And that applies equally to Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. Karma Yoga is technically different from Bhakti Yoga, but it shares a lot of the same elements as Bhakti Yoga. And again, in Bhakti Yoga, the main thing is the consciousness. The activities could be the same as in Karma Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. But in Bhakti Yoga, the consciousness is that I'm ready to do whatever pleases Krishna. And in Karma Yoga, there's some condition. I'll work. I'm attached to a particular type of work, which I'm not prepared to give up. But I will give the fruits to Krishna. And I might give some of the fruits and keep some for myself. Or I might give all of the fruits. But still, I'm attached to that particular type of work. And I'm not prepared to give it up. So there's some condition there that's not in Bhakti Yoga. When one is surrendered to Krishna, one's ready to... It may be giving a class before 50 people, or maybe cleaning the bathroom. Whatever Krishna wants, I'll do, as long as Krishna's happy. Well, I mean, we should do what our authorities tell us to do. But another thing I heard from Mahatma Prabhu years ago, when we were serving together in Mauritius, is that Srila Prabhupada said that we should finish our rounds by 10 in the morning. Otherwise we'll be in anxiety for the rest of the day. And that resonated with me. I mean, I used to do that 12 rounds. I was very... So that's really the best solution, because it's an awkward situation to have to choose between Harinam and 116 rounds. The best thing is to develop a culture and devise a schedule by which one can finish one's rounds early, and then one isn't faced with those dilemmas. Yes, Dravida Prabhu.
This verse about sadhana bhakti, the obstacles are changed.
Yes, very good. Very good. Everyone heard.
No. Repeat for the recording.
So Dravida Prabhu is making the point that according to the definition of sadhana bhakti, priti sadhya bhavet sadhya, that by sadhana, the sadhya or the goal of bhava or ecstatic love is achieved. So he's saying if we keep the goal in mind, that may encourage us along the way, because ecstatic love of Krishna is so sublime. And it's like you might be on a hike, you know, on a trek, and at some stages you might be enjoying it. Oh, this is nice, you know, it's just so beautiful here, and I'm feeling energetic. But then at other stages along the way, maybe, oh man, I'm feeling tired. I'm actually a little hungry. And this is a pretty steep incline. I mean, I'm not used to climbing such steep slopes. And then if you're just living within the experience of the moment, you might think, oh, I'm going to give up. But then you think, oh, actually, if I keep going, it's not that much further. I'll be able to get to the top of the mountain. There will be a glorious view. And then that encourages you to continue. So yes, it is good to keep the goal in mind.
To that end, I create a little couple. The aim is praying, the way is the name.
Dravida Prabhu has, in his humility, he's called it a couplet. I would call it an aphorism or a sutra. The aim is praying. The way is the name. That says it all. Jai, jai, jai. Sadhu, sadhu.
By the way, that was created here. That's not something from before.
Wow, just see the power of the association and the intention. Wonderful. Yes.
I had another.
Yes. Correct. Mahatma Prabhu says that sometimes if we think of the ultimate goal, it may seem so far away we may become discouraged. So if we just think of the next step and take one step at a time, we can feel more encouraged. It's like if you're climbing a 16-story building and you think, I have to climb 15 more flights, you could get discouraged. But if you just think, okay, I can take the next step, I can take the next step, and then before you know it, you're on the top floor. So that is also true. Okay. Yes? Every day is one step. Some devotees say every mantra is one step. Just take one mantra at a time. But whatever the size of the step is, it's important to take it. Yes. Kevin? And let's...
The aim is
praying. Praying means pure love of Godhead. Yes, the aim is praying. Yes, Kevin, what Kevin says is true, that he thought that the aim would be to have direct experience of God. And we're saying that the aim is praying, pure love of God. But God reveals himself to someone who has love for him. You cannot force God to appear before you. You know, you can't order God to appear before you. But he will manifest himself to you when you develop love for him. So the two goals are not different. They're the same. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilokchanena Santasadaiva Hridaye Shuvalokayanti. When we smear our eyes with the ointment of love for God, then we can see the beautiful form of Shamsundar. So they go together. Okay, Mahatma Prabhu says that our time is up. I'm sorry, Balaram Leela Prabhu. Maybe next time. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Radhe Shyam.